Hey, Link here. Thanks for joining me for episode 83, where I speak with Raymond Cripps, developer of Project Feline. In this episode, we talk about how they got into making games, games that they enjoy the most, a game that they feel does not get enough credit, their life outside of gaming, and words of wisdom. We also run through three amusing lightning round questions. Before we get started, don't forget there are links in the episode description that you can follow to learn more about Raymond as well as the podcast. Also, don't forget to like and share the episode, and without further ado, enjoy episode 83. Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Raymond Cripps, who has contributed to projects such as Guardian's Call, Blade Construct, and is currently working on their upcoming game, Project Feline, and as well has his YouTube devlogs. Hi, Raymond. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, Link. Thanks for asking. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to have you here. You know, for anyone listening, there was a little bit of, I don't want to say headache getting everything set up. There was a bit of back and forth only because, unfortunately, the first day we were supposed to talk, there was like a massive thunderstorm and it took out your power for a while. Oh, and then You unfortunately got COVID. So, yeah, I'm happy that we're finally able to work this out and we're able to talk. And, you know,
we finally got it there. The prophets really didn't want me to come talk to you, but I fought my will. I willed my way into it. I made a bargain with the devil, and it allowed me to be here on this very afternoon. And the weather can get pretty crazy down in Australia, but we endure and survive. That's how we do it. And,
you know, I'm happy to hear that. And hopefully, because, you know, this is a rather small podcast, I hope it was not an expensive deal with the devil that you had to make, because, you know, otherwise you overpaid quite a bit.
Nah, it wasn't too bad. I had to replace a few network switches because of this. There was like this lightning strike that just took out a lot of, like, the entire street was down, and for whatever reason my network switches just stopped working. So, but I need those anyway for other stuff, for connection to the whole world. So I just had to replace some of that. Small price to pay to continue to be allowed access online, I suppose. But let's just hope there's no more of that happening. If one happens at this, it's sunny right now, but if something happens at this very moment, I'm going to be so angry. But,
At that point, I think it would be real fair to say the prophets do not want us speaking. However, Raymond, you're here now, so I'm going to bug you with questions. So
please do.
Before we get started, though, would you mind telling me and anyone listening a little bit about yourself and maybe your current projects?
Sure. So I'm an indie game developer / YouTuber / streamer, I suppose. I'm working on this game called Project Feline, which is like my dream game. I started working on it as like a side project. It was just because I don't know, I just wanted to make something I thought was cool. I'd made a few little prototypes before then, and I just really wanted to make, like, just a combination of all stuff I thought cool. So I'm going for, like, the sort of anime art style with the game. It's a 3D platformer. It has, like, high-speed momentum mechanics in it. I've been working on it for a few years now and making videos on YouTube about it and doing live streams showing the development. And it's been a pretty fun ride. I didn't have a lot of experience going in, and I've sort of just been learning as I go, and I've been sharing all of the stories, the kind of stuff that comes up during development, just with people online. And a lot of people come to watch, and they give, like, feedback on the game and that sort of thing. And it's just been a really fun adventure so far, not just on building the game, but sort of engaging with the community around it as well. And I'm currently still on that journey. I have a lot of work ahead of me still, but I'm just taking it a day at a time, learning what I can and trying to make a really cool game, at least to my own standards anyway. And I guess that's a bit about me in terms of just what I'm up to.
So, you know, thank you for that. You know, I I'm not going to lie. I did not know the full breadth of how you managed everything. I originally, I think, learned about you a good while ago. For your own knowledge or for anyone else that's listening's knowledge, how I usually find guests or let me phrase it, people I'd like to speak to, I have like a giant notepad, document, tabs, like everything, and like I found you. I actually found your game because I believe you post as the main character for Project Feline as well to promote the game.
Oh no, that's not me. That's the main character. She writes Sorry. Those posts.
Correct. Right. Exactly. So I learned. I found your main character. I found her Twitter, and then I found you from that. But what I'm getting at is, you know, I think like the idea of the game is really interesting. I'm forgetting the name of this old PS3 game now. But like, there was a character like that, like a cat girl that, you know, did stuff. It was a side scroller game. As cat girls do. But that was one of the things I found most amusing. I was like, oh, hey, this is like a really neat character, because I like the character design from the other one. I thought it was interesting that, you know, it's not fumbling through here is to say that one of the things I found most interesting about the game was the fact that it's a unique character, that it's not just another dude doing things, and that's Thanks. Like one of the things that made me interested and follow along and everything there. Sorry, that was a really weird roundabout way just to say how I originally got interested in the game.
That's a really interesting story. Like, I think that's certainly, I don't think I've ever had someone find me like that. So that's really cool. I'll pass on my compliments to my old gal Gavi here, the main character. I'm sure she'll be pleased to hear that. But I get most people coming across me is just on YouTube. Right, I have all my videos and stuff, but I made her an account, my main character, just in case, like, I don't know, just for fun, in case she wanted to say anything, because, you know, she's got a big personality, but we're both so busy on the game a lot. So yeah, that was cool that we were able to find her through that. That's, I don't think I've had anyone, it's never happened before, so maybe I ought to get her tweeting more. I gotta nag her to tweet out more stuff to get me more interviews.
You know,
maybe when she's old enough, she could do her own interview someday. That'd be sick.
You know, maybe yeah, that'll work out. You know, I'm not gonna lie, unfortunately, as I'm sure you and everyone else has noticed for their own Twitter stuff, that, you know, Twitter doing what Twitter's doing, a lot of things just don't exist anymore. So, you know, yeah, I hope, you know, it would be great to see posts from older accounts or what have you popping off again. You know what I mean?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. It's changed so much. They don't even call it Twitter anymore. I hear the kids today, they call it x.com or something. I don't know. I don't keep track of it all. I just use it to kind of post little clips to try and get podcast interviews. And that's sort of all I really kind of use Twitter for mainly. And I follow like a few artists there too. There's like I really like following like Y2K aesthetic accounts that just post like old graphic design magazines from like 20 years ago. I find that's pretty cool. That's kind of my knowledge of Twitter or x.com is just it's just that basically. But yeah, it's an interesting site, that's for sure.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, Raymond, I am curious, if you don't mind sharing, how is it you got into developing and making games?
I will tell you. But don't tell the prophets I said this. So I got into development when I was pretty young. I was about maybe 11 years old, and it literally started. I was just typed into Google how to make a video game, because I was like playing like a couple games at the time, and every time I get my hands on anything, I want to just, especially when I was little, I just wanted to make my own version of it. So I would like watch, you know, like Bakugan on TV in the morning, and I would want to make my own version of that. I play, you know, certain games, want to make my own thing of them. So I went, oh, how do you actually do that? And I typed in that into Google, and I found some really old tutorial from these two Dutch guys, I think. And this was for Unity Engine. This was like before it kind of took off. This, it was still like paid, I think, at the time. And but they were like the only guys that have this like comprehensive tutorial series on how to make some game in it, and I just followed it. And you know, tutorials, you try to follow it step by step and it still doesn't work. So I had to do a lot of my own like working out and figuring things out. And then I liked it so much that I kind of never stopped. And all through high school, I was like making little prototypes. I tried making like a Slenderman style game and a like a 3D platformer and a third person shooter. I just kind of like tried anything that sounded cool. They were all super jank and coded very badly, but it was fun. And it was, I had this idea in my head of like this, of a game that would be like the best game to make ever. Something that had like parkour in it and fast movement. And that eventually led me to, I guess, to do finally do Project Feline, which is sort of that exact vision. But in between that, like I started just learning the engine. I messed around with it. And then after about like 8 years, I left school and enrolled in some, it was some like game, some animation course. And I didn't really learn much from it. But it was through there I was able to get a gig teaching game development. So all the stuff I had taught myself in Unity with tutorials over the years, I would then pass on to other people. So I was teaching like some programming, animation and stuff. And then while I was doing that, I started Project Feline on the side as like a side thing, because I had made a bunch of these like game jam games and stuff. And I wanted to do something that was a bit bigger and more ambitious. Cause after you make like a dozen, you just get like small little Flappy Bird tier games, it gets kind of boring. So it was during then I started Feline, and then I sort of led me to my current arc in life right now. But yeah, it all started with that one Google search when I was 11, just how do I make video game? And yeah, that's what led me here.
So, you know, thank you for sharing. That's really funny that you go through, I think, the same thing a lot, or sorry, you went through the same thing that a lot of people, I think, have went through when it comes to tutorials, where, you know, you do your best to follow exactly what it's saying. And like, you know, you're done. You're like, something's off here. Something's wrong. And it's,
yeah,
you know, it's always a mix of like, did I make a typo? Was the tutorial any good? Because, you know, as I'm sure you've learned and seen, sometimes the tutorial has assumptions that you know how to do certain things. And then, you know, you don't, and then you don't do those certain things because you didn't know you were expected to, and then nothing works. Like, I'll use, for example, a lot of Photoshop tutorials or what have you, would just say, oh, you'll do this, 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 but it like briefly brushes over something else instead of just saying, you know, go to the menu, click this, click this, click this. It just says do this, but like it says it in such a blasé way that it's just like through the line that if you don't know that that's a whole separate thing that you have to do a certain way, it doesn't end up working, right? So yeah, as I'm sure you enjoyed that same frustration in terms of programming, because I know I certainly
have. Oh yeah, well, I felt it even more when I had made a few tutorials before. When I started doing YouTube, like I would get questions to like, how did you do this and that, and I would try to make a tutorial style video. And yeah, when you try and make a tutorial, you realize like, oh, this is why most of the ones I've watched haven't been so good, because it is quite hard to know that, oh, someone else might not know this. You have to have like a sixth sense of like what will be assumed knowledge and what won't. That was something I learned while teaching too, is that, yeah, a lot of stuff that you think is natural is kind of doesn't come naturally a lot of the time. And you have to really make sure that it's like from an outsider's perspective, it'll make sense. So anyone that does do that well, I have a lot of respect for, but yeah, unless you're paying like extremely close attention to every single frame, every little breath or sentence in a tutorial, it can be really easy to miss that stuff. And it can get real exhausting, especially when you're like equally as stressed out about just trying to get it working on your side. And it's like, is the source material wrong? And it's just so stressful. But yeah, I endured a fair bit of that. it's not fun, but I mean, it kind of has to be painful, I guess. If it was too easy, then I guess, I don't know. I think being able to get over that stuff is and win those battles, I think is satisfying when you can do that.
You know, I will I will definitely speak to the satisfying aspect of that, because yes, you know, there's a very nice dopamine kick that you get when something just works, right? Like something that's fighting. So yeah, you know, 100%. I understand. I agree. It's very satisfying. You know, especially for me, when it's that dopamine hit that you can just relax and, you know, you have the feel good chemicals going, you did the thing. Good job. You know, be proud of yourself.
Even if it's only 0.9% of the time, it's worth it. That's what makes it all worth it.
Exactly. You know, and you know, that finally getting that, finally getting that hello world to show up on the screen, you know, that's the best. Yeah, oh, sorry, man. That's a horrible joke.
I still remember my first hello world to this day, man. It was, oh, it was amazing. It was great. Such a great feeling.
Sorry, I hesitated to make the joke and still did it. The joke being, you know, struggling, the big struggle to make Hello World show up on the screen. I definitely.
Well, yeah. Well, look, I've met some people that like they can't even navigate File Explorer. Like I remember teaching someone once that didn't know like what the control panel was. So I guess, you know, it can be a pretty big accomplishment if you're completely illiterate with computers to get it to at least do some simple command. It can be a pretty big leap. So yeah, I guess for some people even it might be like a huge, I mean, for me it was pretty cool. Like I remember feeling really empowered and that I was a god and could do anything. Then I tried doing more complex things and realized, okay, maybe I'm not a god, but I still have a lot of control here, which is, yeah, it's oh man, it's just taking me back when you mention it. Yeah, to getting the first like character to move. I remember it was just a sphere, and I got it to respond to WASD, and I still remember vividly in my head with the default Unity blue skybox before they actually had a proper skybox. It was just the color blue, and there was no shadows. It was just gray spheres. Getting them to move, that was, oh man, if I could relive that, it'd be awesome. But yeah, it's, I think it's just when that can excite you, you know, you're in for a good ride if you can get excited by that, I reckon.
Exactly. And I want to be very clear. I wasn't trying to make fun of people that are excited and have struggle getting the Hello World to work. I was more making a joke that I'm a horrible programmer and I get pleased by very simple things that shouldn't be hard.
I actually think a lot of the time I kind of get saddened when the opposite is true. When you do something and you don't even register it as like a win, and it's like, oh yeah, I got to say hello world, now I'll move on. But I think there is something to be said for taking those small victories seriously. Like I know it sounds kind of funny, it's just one little function, but especially when you're working on like a long-term project, you really have to like celebrate those tiny little wins. Like it's, if you don't, man, it gets you just kind of get depressed otherwise. So even little things that I do still, like I recently just went and like reorganized an entire folder because some of the names were a bit off and it wasn't organized very well. I literally just reorganized a folder and it was like the best feeling ever because, I don't know, it's a victory of sorts. It's a small victory in a sea, but it's a victory nonetheless. And I feel pretty good about when I can get that stuff going. Because, you know, with game development, it can get so complicated and it really is made up of those little things. So if you can learn to appreciate those things, I think it helps big time.
So, you know, thank you. That is actually a very good point to make, that sometimes, you know, especially on bigger projects, it's made up of a bunch of smaller things, and being proud of the small victories is probably one of the things that can help you stave off stave off burnout, you know. So thank you, that's a very Absolutely. Very good point to make, to being proud of the little victories.
Thanks. That's what's helped me out anyway. I mean, I don't know, like I don't know if it's always the same for everyone, but at least for me, I feel like that's sort of how I get through it, because I do get asked sometimes. Because I think it's been like a few years since I started my game, and there's a lot of times where I just wanted to stop because it's like, oh my god, this is so hard. Like I should just give up. Like that'd be the easy choice. But then I don't know, when I think back to that first memory of getting a sphere to move and how awesome it felt, I was like, well, if I can appreciate that, if I can just keep focused on that small stuff, I'll hopefully make it. So, yeah. So it kind of just keeps me in check, keeps me kind of happy. And then it means that when the bigger stuff happens, it feels even better. It sort of compounds. So I look forward to those big victories, but they aren't very common, but they do come by every so often. And yeah, that's when you can get by with just being happy that the computer opened the, like, you I don't know, you fix some tiny little bug, like the character accelerating slightly too slow or whatever, and if you can get it to behave, then oh man, it's great. But yeah. Anyway, I'm probably sounding a bit like over, because I have to put up with a lot of weird little problems working on the game. But no, but I really do enjoy it. It's it just takes its toll when you do it a lot. But man, I live for those victories.
Yes, as someone who is currently working on a long, very long project, I 100% can relate, and I understand, and I agree. However, Raymond, I am curious, speaking of things that you enjoy, do you have, wow, sorry, I just blanked on, I'm horrible at transitions. I blanked there. So speaking of things that you enjoy, I'm wondering if there are, like, do you have a game that you enjoy the most, or do you have some games that you enjoy above others? If you mind sharing what those games would be.
Oh, sure. My favorite, I guess the games I keep coming back to, I don't have a lot of time nowadays to play a lot, but the games I do come back to from time to time, I would say are like Skyrim. I've been playing that for like 10 years on and off with the same character, and I still haven't done all the game's content because it's so big, but I can just come in and out for like an hour and feel pretty good. There's also any Ratchet and Clank game I find pretty fun. I've played the PS2 classics and the PS3 trilogy. I sometimes will try and come back to those when I can because they're just so fun. And I guess one game in particular that sort of shaped me a lot is the one really bad Sonic game that came out in 2006. I'm not kidding. That's I don't know what it is. I have a special relationship with that game. It was one of the first games I owned growing up, because my parents didn't want me playing video games when I was younger, but it, because everyone I knew at school had like the PS2 and were playing Crash Bandicoot and Lego Star Wars and all these cool games, and I had to just go to their house to play it. And it wasn't until I was a bit older, we waited long enough for, I really wanted a PS2, but my parents waited and they said, no, you want the PS3. It's going to be bigger and better. So that was my first console, and one of the first games I had on it was that Sonic game. And I don't know what it is, because it's like not only one of my favorites, it's also a game that I kind of like and dislike. Like, because everyone hates it, and I understand why they hate it, but for whatever reason, I can kind of look past it and see what they were trying to do with it. And I don't know, I just the attitude of the game, the aesthetic, the font choices, the music, even though it's janky as hell, it's just, I don't know, there's just something about it that really is magical. So every so often I'll revisit that, just to kind of, because over time my perspective on it sort of deepens. I remember as I started doing my own games, I started to get curious on what the backstory was on the development of that game, and I learned a bunch of, there isn't a lot of info out there on it, but I remember just like deep diving into the drama that was happening at the studio to have it come out like that, all the weird there's a big rabbit hole. And so I can appreciate it now for like from a developer point of view on like what kind of weird stuff happened, and I can also appreciate it as a child who had never heard of Sonic before that game. So I didn't have I think a lot of people had very high expectations for it, but I didn't see any of the marketing. I didn't know it was meant to reinvent the franchise. I just remember picking it up randomly and thinking it was pretty neat. So I didn't watch YouTube around, because there was a lot of like, that's kind of when YouTube was taking off. So there'd be a lot of like, IGN videos or Game Grumps or whatever that would collectively kind of bag on the game. And because I wasn't exposed to that, I didn't know anyone else that had played it. So I had my own isolated, self-contained experience with that game. And it probably sounds crazy to anyone else that's played it, but I don't know. I really respect it as a game for what it was trying to do. It might not have come out the right way at the end, but it's kind of a miracle it was even made at all, considering, like, I don't know what was going on. Like, the team got cut in half, the director left halfway in. Like, considering all that, I thought it was kind of incredible that it even released. So, I don't know. There's just a certain confidence about it, even though it doesn't really hold up. I guess it wouldn't hold up today. It probably didn't even hold up back then, but there's a certain, I don't know, there's a certain attitude about it that I haven't seen in their newer games in the series. Because I think after that, they kind of got burned, and it seems like they've been afraid to go back to what was there, what they were doing in 2006. Because this was like before the retro. They lately I've noticed they have a very heavy retro, like nostalgia thing going on, where they constantly bring back Green Hill Zone in every game, and that in 2006 in that game it didn't have any of that stuff in it. It was like really seriously trying to be this Final Fantasy tier story. It was a really, the game had a weird story too, and that's kind of why I loved it as well, is that it dared to have this high stakes story that took itself way too seriously. But to me, I respect that more than like trying to play it safe. And oh, remember Chemical Plant Zone? Remember, remember this? And that's sort of the vibe I get from them now. But yeah, I don't know. It's it holds a place in my heart, and the other games too, like Skyrim and Halo. That's another one. I think it's an all time classic that I'll come back to from time to time if I'm around friends. It's, yeah. So those are my ones: Skyrim, Ratchet and Clank, Sonic, and Halo.
So, you know, thank you for sharing it. And it's always interesting to hear someone's breakdown, I guess you would say, of like a nostalgic game that they have. And especially if the game is generally not seen in like good light. Because, you know, and I'm sure everyone's played some bad games, and I'm sure everyone has fond memories of some bad or janky games. And it's always interesting to hear how, you know, how like someone can look at a game today and like have that kind of like nostalgic reflection or retrospective on it and be like, yeah, you know, back then it was great because of these reasons, and now I think it's great because of these reasons. And, you know, those reasons don't always align. In the case of Sonic 06, I would be very shocked to hear that those same reasons as a kid and as an adult, especially as an adult yourself making games, to have those align. But it's always interesting to hear like the differing views of that. So thank you for sharing that, because like it's like I said, it's, I just find that fascinating and interesting.
Have you played Sonic 06?
I have not played Sonic. Sorry, I don't know why I said that so indignantly. No, I have never. I've never really played Sonic. I haven't played Sonic 06, and I'm not really a huge 3D Sonic fan to begin with.
Yeah, I get that. I kind of used to be, but I wouldn't say I'm a fan anymore myself. But yeah, you've probably seen gameplay of it though, I'd imagine. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, everyone's always shocked when I tell them that's like one of my favorites, but I don't know. Yeah, I am kind of drawn to those very weird disaster games. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I just think I just respect what they tried doing. Maybe they'll try it again, maybe not. But
yeah. You know, I think the newest 3D Sonic game might have been them trying again, which I have not played. I have no opinion on it. The only real opinion I have on Sonic 06 is that I know it's, you know, a really rough game, the same as like Sonic Boom or some of the other ones. Mm. I think the only other 3D Sonic game I've played recently, or most recent one, would have been Sonic Adventure, the Dreamcast one.
I've played a little of that.
Yeah, you know, and I've only played a little of it too, I think the first level. And outside of that, whatever was included in Sonic Generations, I want to say. So like, you know, when I say I don't really play 3D Sonic games, it's you know, as a by and large, and not for any particular reason, I just don't, you know. I imagine yeah. one day I should maybe check them out, but like, yeah, I don't have I have a lot of other things to distract me, if that makes any sense, you know?
Yeah. Well, hopefully one of those games will be Project Feline, one of my games. That's what my hope would be anyway. As a game developer, that's always my mission. So yeah, but yeah, I don't blame you for not trying them. I kind of lost interest in Sonic like 10 years ago after they kind of drifted away from 06. I guess I kind of stayed in 2006 and didn't really follow them through history to what they're doing at the moment. But yeah, it's probably heaps that I don't even know about that they've done that. But yeah, I don't know. Nothing's really grabbed out at me and interested me that much because I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's just maybe, I don't know. I feel like maybe there's just this thing where it's like, if there's like a game you liked as a kid, you'll kind of stick, at least for me, I find that I tend to just stick rigidly to stuff I liked when I was a kid and don't venture too far out a lot of the time. But that's just me though. But yeah, it's a rough one. But yeah. Probably like it's kind of, it might be worth to just play one level of it just so you really kind of, but yeah, it's if you've seen like enough footage of it, you'll kind of get the gist mainly.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to assume your parents did this, but I don't know. You know, the whole try one level of it just to get an idea kind of thing, that very much reminds me of, you know, when you're sitting at dinner when you were a child and like your parents put like, you know, broccoli or something in front of you and like, just try one, see if you yeah. like it. And you're like, I don't want to. I know I won't. It's like, whatever. It's, you know, it's weird green. It's like, just try it. See if you yeah. like very reminiscent of that. Just try a level, maybe you'll like it.
yeah. Go on, try one of the worst games in the last 20 years. Come on, just try it. Yeah. I feel that.
could you imagine if that was the pitch that they unironically made at the time? Just try one level to see if you like it. We dare you or something.
Honestly, that would have been funny. Maybe that would have saved it, because I think a lot of people were kind of disappointed by the image that they gave it, because it wasn't until years later I actually looked at the trailers and I was like, oh my god, they were really hyping this up, because it was like the next generation and it was all meant to be this big hype thing. But if they had instead spun it as like, look, we had to rush this out for Christmas, can you just try one level? If they had tried that, I'm so curious how the legacy would have been. Because I had to believe that part of the reason why I liked it and no one else did is because I didn't see the trailers and everyone who had was just really let down by them. So yeah, I don't know. Marketing's it can be a big tool to kind of affect how something is perceived. So if they had tried that, if they had been just upfront and honest, I don't know, maybe it would have helped, but I don't know. We'll never know.
Look, there's two more years. We could get Sonic 26 and they could, you know, Electric Boogaloo it. We'll see. There's a few years.
They could try it over and then try that strategy for it and say, please.
Try one level, we dare you.
Yeah. Maybe I should try that. Maybe I should just rush out my game and then use that as a tactic and see what happens.
You know, look, Raymond, I'm not going to lie. I like the idea of the game you are making, a parkour action platformer, or however the terminology is. I put terminology in air quotes just because I've spoken with some people. And as you know, these kind of games, they can have different words depending on like the level of like intricacies and all of that. So I don't know the full breadth umbrella proper, right? But I like the idea of the game you're making. I would very much prefer to not try it and have it be of that same notoriety. I think you would as well. Let's be honest.
Yeah. You got a point. Yeah. I wouldn't want to take that road. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't worry, Link. I'll make sure it gets done right. I won't repeat the I won't do the Sonic strategy. I won't rush a game out for Christmas. I promise. I will. I'll spend the time. I'll do it. And yeah, yeah, that's fair point. Yeah, but thanks though. I never am quite sure whether, you know, when you're working on something and you're in the thick of it, it's never easy to tell whether it's like interesting when you stare at it so long. So it's good to know that it's like interesting enough that you wanted to talk to me about it, even because I see it every day and I'm kind of tired of looking at it. So it's yeah, thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, I understand, like I said, I understand, you know, as someone who is working on a long form project for work and everything, I very much understand going road blind with what you're doing, you know. So yes, but yeah, you know, you're welcome. I'm glad that is news that you are happy to hear, you know.
Oh, very happy to hear. So the day I'm not happy to hear that news, you know, it's over for me.
Yeah, yes, you know, at that point it is time to hang up, right? Yeah. Yes, it's Jover. So Raymond, I am curious. You know, because we just spoke about a game that you enjoy that I don't think you would argue doesn't get enough credit. However, I am wondering if there is a game that you have enjoyed throughout your life, maybe from your younger years or what have you, that you feel does not get enough credit.
Ooh, I don't know any from my childhood, because I think a lot of the games I kept were pretty, you know, they did pretty well. People give them pretty good credit. There was one game I found just recently that I had never heard of before that was really unique, and it left an impression on me, but I had never heard anyone mention it or talk about it. And that game is Child of Eden. I think it was released on PlayStation 3 and Xbox, so it's an exclusive to that generation of consoles, which is probably why you can't find it on Steam or anything. It's kind of hard to find out in the wild, but it was this sort of rhythm game. And it had, well, not even a rhythm game. It doesn't, well, kind of. It's a very like visual, it's a visual and audio treat. And the gameplay itself isn't what really caught me, but it was the aesthetics of the whole thing. It's very reminiscent of like that Windows 7 era of design where everything was very eco-themed and glossy. And the music in particular was really cool because it's tied in the game. It was developed by this, I don't remember the guy's name, it was some Japanese developer, but the same dude also oversaw this musical project. I know that the name of the musical project was called Genki Rockets, I think. And that's sort of like its own thing. And they release like songs. I don't know if they're still active, but like 10 years ago, they had done a few albums. And that has this very like electronic pop sound. But then Child of Eden, the game, uses a lot of that music from Genki Rockets, because it's the same guy that's sort of running both of them. And it turns it into this whole story of like a audio rhythm game, but also this whole story about a girl that was born in outer space and she is like returning to Earth. And she's like cataloging through like the Earth computer that is like left behind all of humanity is like corrupted. And in the game, you have to play the rhythm game part of it and shoot little orbs to decorrupt the computer. And it unlocks little photos and music clips and stuff of like, you know, like a humanity record or something like that. That's sort of the story of it. And I don't know what it is, but I just really love that idea and the way it's presented. So I ended up like buying the CDs from that band because they remix a lot of the music in the game. And I just love jamming to it. So it's not really as a game. I wouldn't say it's like the most complex, hard to learn video game of all time, but just the vision, the artistry of it. It's this very like optimistic futurism type aesthetic to it, which, yeah, and I've never heard anyone mention it. Like, I literally found it at a Goodwill on a shelf, and the logo looked cool, and I was like, oh, this looks kind of neat. And it was some old like Xbox 360 game from like 10 years ago. So Child of Eden, I would say, is I maybe it does get credit in the communities where people know it, but I kind of wish I would see more stuff about it, because it's just like the vibe is so cool. And that's kind of it, really. I just like the vibe.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I typed it up as you're explaining the whole kind of overarching elements of all of the little pieces. And I remember seeing this game more. Let me rephrase that. I remember the one screenshot of like the manta ray. This, I understand what you mean by, you know, the eco thing of Windows 7 era, or what I'm interpreting that more as is that like their theme of Windows 7, like the arrow design and all of that fun stuff.
I love the arrow design. It's so this cool.
Very much feels like a weird like version or like design with a similar kind of what have you. I apologize. It's a really hard and vague thing to say.
It is.
And if anyone that's listening, like just looks up a picture of this and is from the age where they were using Windows 7 when it was, you know, 20 years. I don't remember how old Windows 7 is. Old enough.
I don't know. Maybe 15 years, I want to say.
Exactly. Give or take. You'll understand what that means. The vibe is very much, it feels like it looks like Windows 7 Aero design stuff. It's a weird thing to say. Just look up a screen.
It's like,
you'll understand.
If instead of a desktop, it's like if Windows 7 was a planet that you could go like be it. Like I look at pictures of it and I'm thinking, I want to live there. I want to go and just hang out there for the rest of my life. That's awesome. But unfortunately, it is contained only within the circuits of my Xbox. So that won't happen. But it's just, you know, it I feel like it's from this era of design where people were very optimistic about the future. I think that's probably why I'm so drawn to it, because it has this very childlike, innocent, happy optimism, abstract. And it's very abstract, too. Like, and that's why it's kind of hard to describe, is that you don't even really know what you're looking at when you're looking at the picture. You see a few shapes, and it's very vibrant and colorful, but you don't even really know what it is. And it's kind of like the future. You don't know what the future is either. But when I looked at it, I was like, man, this is going to, like, if the future looks like this, this would be sick. And then, of course, it's not what happened. We fast forward 15 years and we don't live in the Windows 7 scape, unfortunately. But man, yeah, I don't know. I just really vibe with what they were going for.
You know, and yeah, I understand that completely. Is I'm sure all of us have games that, we, you know, that they speak to us on a very different level that are not always easy to put into words, right?
Yeah, so, very much.
So, Raymond, I do want to ask this just because, unfortunately, you know, we don't have too much time together for this. You know, you have some prior engagements. For me, it's a very late evening. So like, I want to get to this one, because there are a few things I want to talk about 100% and not miss the opportunity. And one of those is because I like to ask people, speaking with developers or what have you, more about like who they are. So I'm wondering, outside of games, what do you enjoy to do? How do you relax?
Oh, what do I do? When I'm not like working on a game or playing a game, I spend a lot of time thinking, and that's usually while I'm doing something else. So I'll spend, you know, I if I had to think real hard, I do spend a lot of time researching stuff, which I don't know if that counts as relaxing, but I'll like put on some music and just read a bunch of like, I'll look out for like other indie games or, you know, whatever, just to like kind of learn what I can. When I was a child, I used to draw a lot. I don't do it as often now, but every so often I'll get the urge to just draw something out, and I'll stay up like all night in Photoshop creating something. I need to do that more often probably, because my skills are probably weakening. But drawing, and this is going to sound kind of weird. One of my hobbies that I really enjoy is cataloging my CD collection. And this probably sounds like something that it probably sounds like work, but one of the reasons I like Child of Eden is because the music is awesome. So I'll like go and try and hunt down like music that sounds like that. I'll try and find like just music that inspires me. And CDs are really cool because they're higher quality. Like they're very high. That's a really high quality medium. And you can just sort of keep it on your computer without paying a Spotify premium subscription. So I'll try and like shop around for like cheap CDs. And then I really enjoy the process of just ripping them to my computer and like filling in all the metadata with the right stuff. Because it doesn't do that on its own. It doesn't have it on the disc, so you have to look at the back cover and find all the track names. And even then, on the actual CD cover, there'll be like mistakes, like maybe they've capitalized something wrong, or the spelling isn't correct, or whatever it is. And just going in and like fixing that in the metadata, and adding the trying to find like a high quality album cover online, and embedding it into the file, setting the right year it was released, the track order. I don't know what it is, but I just enjoy it. It's just fun, because when you do it and you've got this perfectly cataloged little library of music, it's just really satisfying to just scroll through and see all the songs and the album covers and the track names, and then listening to the music. That's also fun, of course. But to me, one of the things I don't like sort of with modern music, how it is today with streaming, is that you don't get any control over that. Like it just puts in all the song titles and stuff for you, and then you know they'll sometimes have the mistakes, spelling mistakes that are on the CD cover in the Spotify release, and I'm like, oh, they've capitalized this wrong, I really want to fix it, but I can't. So I just try and find like the files on like Bandcamp or something and do it myself. So it's kind of, I don't really know if that counts as a hobby, but I enjoy it. And then when I'm not doing that, I'd like to walk and read. And that's what I do outside
of games. Thank you for, no, that was on me. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I always find it interesting when, you know, I and this is in general, because I've spoken to some people who are like, yeah, this is what I do. I don't think it counts as like their hobbies. And like, I don't know if this is a hobby or not, but it's like, it 100% is, right? Because it's something that you enjoy doing, but it sounds almost like it would be like a meditative kind of thing. Which is interesting to say when you think about think in the face of the fact that you have to be doing things. Because usually when, you know, you talk about meditative stuff, it's something where you're just relaxing and sitting and doing, and not like having to do work with it. But you know, if it helps you actually relax and unwind, you know, regardless of what you're doing with it, it would 100% be, you know, relaxing, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it's a good activity, because I don't know what it is, but I can't not do stuff. I don't know what it is, but when I'm not doing anything, I feel like something's wrong. Like I just can't stand it. So I have to just do something with my time. I find it really hard to just not do anything. I don't know. I just can't stand it. So I have to like always be working on something or doing something. And I guess, yeah, in a way it is. It's given like how chaotic game development can get, it is by contrast very relaxing, because it's like, oh, okay, I know exactly what this, when I import this CD, I know exactly how many tracks there are. There's not going to be some weird bug where the sound doesn't play or whatever, because it's, I didn't make the song, it's already been made. I don't have to fix bugs. I just have to type in, I guess it's just data entry, I suppose. And you've already got like, you know, it's simpler than game development. So I guess it seems by comparison meditative. I guess I also like doing chores too, which I guess for the same reason, is sort of meditative, because it's very like repetitive and you don't really have to think. You just have to sit there and like do it. So I like every week I'm always like dusting, cleaning up, you know, just doing laundry even. I'm like folding my shirts the right way. I enjoy those moments where I don't have some like bug or animation glitch to worry about. And it's like, all I have to do is fold my shirts and put them away. God, that's so fun, because it's just easy. So yeah, I enjoy those little moments with that CD cataloging or doing laundry gives you. So yeah.
You know, I 100% understand that. As someone that used to work doing customer support, so here's the thing. Yeah, the job's horrible. However, the nice thing about it was the tasks came to themselves, and it was, you know, call came in, call was done, that was it. And like the task was done. There wasn't all these other things. So similar in the sense of like you're folding clothes or you're entering data, you have a clearly defined start, middle, and end of the task, right? And that's that was one of the things I enjoyed the most of it. And that's, you know, in a similar way, you know, outside of horrible calls, they were rarely was it stressful because it was never this thing of, well, how do I solve this problem? Having to spin on the problem, having to think hard, having to, you know, debug the problem, whatever. It was very much, oh, hey, here's the song name. Oh, there is a typo. Double check it. You're like, yep, fixed. Good. And like, it's done. You know, it's done. You can feel good that it's done. And then you can move on to the next thing and the next thing. Right. And if your job or your day job or what have you, your day to day is doing things that don't have that kind of straightforwardness, having a thing to do that is very straightforward, you know, can be very relaxing just because, you know, like you said, you know, folding clothes is, it's a defined start, middle, end of a task, right? So it's, I understand completely on a personal level. I don't, if anyone else doesn't, you know, that's one day maybe, but I 100% understand how and why, you know, you like how those things might not be relaxing to some, but are, right?
Yeah. And for the listeners, if you don't enjoy doing that sort of small stuff, if you don't enjoy your chores, maybe you should try, because it's really cool. And there's a really good book on that kind of got me into taking this more seriously called it's a book about like organizing your closet, but I think it applies to a lot of things. It's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying by Marie Kondo. And she has this whole business where she just goes in and essentially shows people how to organize their wardrobe. And a lot of the technique is just teaching them how to get rid of stuff. And then the stuff they keep, they like, here's how you fold it properly and sort it correctly. And there's a certain meditative mental clarity that it gives you when you go through that process. And if you don't want to read, if you're not a book type of guy, I think there is a Netflix show where she actually will go to people's houses and like show her method to people and help them clean their closet. And they're always in tears by the end because of just how happy they are to just organize stuff. So if that's something you, for the listeners, if you're not quite into that, but you kind of wish you were, but you don't know really where to how to get into it, I would recommend that book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying.
So, you know, thank you for that recommendation. And, you know, on the topic of meditative what have you thoughts and, you know, self-reflection, I'm going to hit you really quick with a few lightning round questions, and then we'll work on getting you out of here. Is that all right?
Hit me. Let's go.
Awesome. So the first question up, as delivered by the lovely quote box, but which video game character is most likely to call themselves a thirst trap despite having no business doing so, and why?
What's a thirst trap? What is that?
A thirst trap would be someone that how to properly explain this. Give me one second. I'm gonna see if I can get a nice PG one. A thirst trap is a type of social media post intended to entice viewers' attraction. It refers to a viewer's thirst, likening their attraction to dehydration, implying desperation. I don't know if that helps.
So it's like, so it's like trying to prey on people's dehydration. To go, aha, you are dehydrated. Got you. I don't know.
You know, let me
Google it. Let's see what if I type in thirst trap.
I think yes. I think if you read it,
well, there's a lot of hot dudes. it's not quite what I had in mind when I was thinking. Oh, there's some beer. That sort of is relevant. I think I kind of get the vibe. All right. My a video game character that would, what was the most likely to call themselves a first trap despite having no business doing so? I want to say GLaDOS from Portal 2 would be my, I just, cause I'd imagine if she did that, it'd be funny. Cause she's pretty sassy, I guess. She would do that, but she's a robot. So I don't know if robots can trap people like that, but that would be my answer. GLaDOS.
Okay. Thank you. Do you think The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time would have played much differently if it was The Legend of Zelda Trombone of Time?
Oh, I've played a little of this game, and I didn't get up to the part where he actually has the ocarina, but ocarinas are pretty cute instruments. A trombone is it's not very cute. It has a different vibe. I think, depends on what you mean by play. You could probably program it the same, but if you just change out a few sound samples to sound like a trombone, it'd probably be like a pretty funny comedy game. Because it's a very like fairy type aesthetic. And if Link's trying to do something and it's like play the, I don't know what he does with the ocarina in the game, but I'm assuming he uses it to solve puzzles or something. And if he whips out a trombone instead, I could imagine that being a comedy game at that point because it just sounds funny. You wouldn't expect that sound coming out of that little dude. So I think it wouldn't play differently, but the vibe would be very different. That'd be my guess. I have heard it's a good game though. Should I like try and I keep hearing Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Could I try and track that down? I've heard it's like okay, but I is it one of those like all-time classics or is it one of those Sonic 06 type games?
Oh no, it very much is an all-time classic. I would recommend giving it a shot as well as Majora's Mask. Quick, very sidebar. Ocarina of Time, took a while to make. They then spun off a quick sequel using as much reused assets as they could, but a very different vibe where Majora's Mask is an entire game about working through death and rebirth and accepting death and all these kind of things. It's a much heavier game.
Let me rephrase my answer. If it had a trombone in Ocarina of the Trombone of Time, it would also be a heavier game by virtue of the instrument weighing more. That's my answer.
Very fair, very fair. One more for you, and then I'll work on you getting you out of here. What costume and abilities does Kirby inherit from you?
Oh, what costume? He'll inherit Project Feline merch as a t-shirt. He'll have a t-shirt with Gabby on it, and he'll have the superpower of growing ramen noodles from the top of his head. And being able to draw and have a weird obsession with CDs. That's what would happen.
So thank you for that. And, you know, I very much appreciate, you know, you working your way through the lightning questions with me. I apologize for whatever came up on Google when you typed in thirst trap.
I mean, it's a lot of pictures of Terry Crews.
Interesting.
He's a pretty cool guy, I guess, sir. I never turned down more Terry Crews in my life.
Fair enough. Now, Raymond, you know, as I said, I hopefully have not ran you a little longer or too much longer than you had hoped, you know, for pre-engagements or what have you. However, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. However, if there was anything else you wanted to quickly throw out there, a cool game, what you're doing, something you feel more people should just be more aware of, the floor is yours. As well, please, if you have any parting words of wisdom from your experiences that you are happy to share, by all means, please share those.
Absolutely. So one thing that people really should be more aware of is my indie game Project Feline, which you can wishlist on Steam right now. If you type in Feline in, I think it's you just type in the word Feline, it'll come up there, which is pretty cool. So if you add that to your wishlist, it makes me happy, makes Steam happy, means when I release it, people see it more. And then if more people see it, then I, you know, more people are going to be playing it. And that's just good for everyone. So more people do need to be aware of that. And if you're a developer kind of guy that's interested in game development, then you need to be aware of my YouTube channel as well, where I tell stories throughout the development of the game so far. and where I also live stream if you want to see like the day-to-day torture that I have to endure. In terms of parting advice, wisdom, for people that are like, I have a lot, I do get asked a lot by people that want to learn game dev, like how to go about it. And especially in the age of information, I feel there is a lot of advice out there and a lot of it kind of contradicts as well. So if anyone's tried to look up what engine to use, whatever, like you'll probably reach this brick wall where there's just contradicting information everywhere. But part of what made it really hard for me to just teach myself things, because I'm a very sort of self-learning type guy. And one of the things that gets in the way of that is just how do you know what to listen to and how do you filter things out? And I'd imagine one thing that helped me a lot with doing that, and that's sort of what led me to learn like how to 3D model, how to program and stuff, is to sort of have a critical eye with the advice you get. So it's kind of meta wisdom, I suppose. It's not just, it's more like you got to be discriminatory about what wisdom you decide to let in, because one thing that helps is to know where the wisdom is coming from, what sort of person it's coming from. Because with the live streams I do, I do get a lot of people in the chat like that will give me like unsolicited advice or help or like suggestions. And sometimes they're helpful and sometimes not so much. And I think for anyone that wants to like get into like the deeper levels of like being a, like wants to, likes games and wants to make their own game, or even just wants to learn any skill, I think knowing how to pick out good and discard things from advice and not just taking all of it is useful to have. And one way that I've found that helps me do that is to kind of study whoever is giving it and figuring out if you have things in common. So it's a bit of a hard thing to do. It took me many years to do, but I really think knowing what you like, what you're like as a person, what your weaknesses and strengths are, what you're willing to tolerate, what you're not willing to tolerate. If you know that about yourself, you'll be able to more easily discriminate against advice that is compatible with your style of things. Because one thing that I picked up on when I was doing game dev teaching is that there are just a lot of people that think there is only one way to do something. And that's sometimes true, but I think that there are, you know, something that might work for someone might not work for everyone else, but it can be hard to know that if there's only one thing being told or there's contradicting things, it doesn't seem like a clear right one. The right one will be whatever matches your personality the best. So if you can if you can start to look at advice through that lens, of this person who said this thing to me that gave me this suggestion, you know, personality wise, oh, he's really similar to me. He hates the same things I don't like and whatever. If you can find someone like that, it's you can take a lot of their advice more. But if the person you're listening to is not like you at all, you'll find that what might work for them is not going to work out so much for you. And that doesn't mean that you're bad. It just means that it's like they have different skill points. And they've chosen to invest them different. So it's better to try and take some bits that you can, but trying to find more examples of someone who's got the same skill points as you. And that would be my wisdom I would share, just because that's something I've had to kind of work through when just teaching myself things online. It's just knowing like who you are and what will work with your strengths and what won't. And that's my wisdom.
So thank you very much for sharing that. And I understand completely what you are saying there. You know, it can be very difficult to take certain advice from people. And this, you know, just to kind of add on to what you're saying, and sometimes, you know, for what your vision is or what you're doing as well, you know, sometimes that advice feels like it could be contradictory or not what you are aiming to do. So sometimes, also thinking on that and maybe not taking it blindly, kind of like you're saying, is fantastic advice. You know, especially I like the points of when you're trying to find advice from people that are more in line with what you're doing or the same kind of personality type or what have you. Just because, you know, that can make things a little easier, makes a little more sense when, you know, if someone is giving you advice from a similar experience and not just, you know, a generalist kind of thing. Like, yeah, there's only one way to make a character jump, when there's in reality a bunch of them. And the way that you're doing it in a parkour game is very different than, you know, Mario would, right? So taking advice from someone that's made a parkour game, as opposed to just the general advice from like a Mario game or a Sonic game or what have you, is going to be more applicable. That's how I interpreted what you're saying. I believe that's what is what's being said, more or less.
Well, I guess it's admittedly hard advice to describe, but I to give an example to kind of help with it, because this is something I see a lot, where I'll go on, like, when I was starting out, I used to do this a lot, where I would like ask questions on Reddit on like how to, and it's not usually even a technical thing, it's just like a, it might be even a personality driven thing, because a lot of the things I find are very like personality driven, like, should you work in a team, should you work alone, how should you do your advertising for your game, like that kind of stuff, because that's all really hard to do. And I think people kind of get caught up in all the different ways to do it. And I remember I had this experience a lot where I would ask, like, how do I go about, like, I don't know, securing like my first grant so I can fund things with production or whatever. And there'll be like 10 different people that have all completely different like angles that will come at you. And now that I'm a bit older and I've done some things and I've spent some time on my game, I can tell at a glance now when something is going to work for me and when it won't. But when I was younger, I had no way of knowing. And I was like, oh, well, I'll just try this. And it's like, oh, this doesn't quite work for me because I have different thresholds than the person who suggested this. Like, you know, one thing I remember hearing a lot was, you have to do like all the market research and identify your target consumer and make a game for them. And that will work for people. But I found that me going about it like that just wasn't working. And I tried just doing something how I intuitively would think to do it. And the thing is that that is working for me, but even that will not work like all the time. Like that'll only work depending on like what kind of, like if you're the kind of guy that's prepared to, I don't know, that just intuitively, like you're lucky enough to have an idea that people want and you have like the skills to do it, then that'll work. But if you aren't exactly like that, and maybe your idea is a bit niche, or maybe you lack the technical skills to do it, then you're going to need different advice to help you. And I just find that for beginners, I think if you're new, or especially if you're young, it's like you don't know yourself well enough yet to know what is going to work out. And it's not to say that you absolutely can know what will work, but I think there's markers of like what sounds like what will you have less time suffering with. Like, what's going to be the one that's slightly less difficult? Like, it's going to be hard anyway, but it's like, what are you going to suffer less with? And that's sort of how I've learned to look at it. But it requires a lot of introspection, which is not something you can really find on Reddit or a Discord forum. Like, no one can tell you that stuff. You can't ask someone else, and they can't give you that answer. It's something you have to kind of look inside for and learn. And then, you know, when I was doing my game, I kind of did that, because I kind of started pivoting in the wrong direction about like a certain way through it, where I was doing something that wouldn't really work for me, but it would work for like plenty of others. And I had to look inside and go, is this method of doing this thing, is my way of going about this, is this going to be the way that I'm going to actually, like, me, am I going to be able to do it? And it was a tough thing, but I ended up pivoting, and things have been a bit easier now that I kind of know what decisions work for me more. And it's really advice that I guess it can be applied to a lot of things. But I found I wish someone had told me that when I was starting out, that because a lot of people I remember meeting when I was like beginning, all the advice they told me just didn't really work. But it would work for others, it just wouldn't really work for me. And I guess the simple of it is that it doesn't necessarily mean it's like you're bad for not following it or whatever. It just means that you have to play a different game. So like for devlogs, because I have my devlogs and my live streams, and that's worked out really well for me. I don't know why, but it has. But I know that that will not be the thing everyone else will want to do. Like, some people are really not comfortable on camera, or some people really aren't, they don't want to talk about their game a lot, and they don't, you know, they don't like being in the spotlight. So if someone like that tries to do the devlog marketing strategy of trying to get their game out, it isn't going to work out as well for that person, unless they want to change who they are to work for that. But they could do that. But I think there's probably a way, if there's someone like that that can't do that stuff, there's probably another way they could do it that would suit their personality more. And I know it's very, I guess, a long answer to it. But I think to me that is the most important. That's what I really wish someone had told me. If I had to like grab any wisdom from the past, if I had to go back in time and ask, that's what I would have wanted to hear. And yeah.
So, you know, thank you, Raymond, for elaborating, clarifying on that. I really appreciate that. And I think anyone else that's listening, hopefully they can appreciate that as well. And, you know, that's something that speaks to them that might help clear up some of their own, I don't want to say confusion, clear up some of their own fog that they might have experienced. They might be experiencing the same way that you had experienced it, you know?
I hope so. Yeah.
So Raymond, as I said, I don't want to take up too much more time. I do want to let you get out of here. However, really quick, where can people follow you? Where can they find more about you? So that way I can put that in the episode description for you.
They can follow me in a few places. They can follow me on youtube.com/RaymondCripps. That is kind of my home. That's where I put the most stuff out. They can also, if they don't have time to watch videos and they wanted just something quick to scroll through, then I have my Twitter at RaymondAFCripps. And I also have an Instagram, which I post stuff to at RaymondAFCripps. And is there anywhere else I am? I do have a website as well, which I should update more, just RaymondCripps.com. That'll have all my links in it. It'll have some art, some music, and some games that I've put up just on that site. And Twitch too. I also live stream on Twitch. So YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, and my website. Link down below.
Awesome. And exactly, link down below is the best way to put that one.
Smash those links. Please smash them. I need them.
Smash those links. Ring those like buttons.
Oh yeah. Ring really ring them. I need you need to ring them so loud that I can hear them from Australia. Then I'll know that I'll say thanks. Even though you won't hear me. But yeah. You need to do that right now. You need to like all that stuff. Please do it.
So, you know, Raymond, outside of that though, if there wasn't anything else, I will let you get on with your day.
I will let you get on with yours too, my man. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, Raymond, I very much appreciate you making the time to have this conversation. I was about to start reading the script when I was actually trying to reply to you. I do appreciate you making the time. I appreciate that you were able to persevere and we were able to work this out. All things considered, outside of like all the fun profits not wanting us to talk, you know.
Yeah, we can't. No, you better not be telling them that we talked, okay? Because they still might hit me with another lightning strike or whatever. They might hit me with COVID again or something. If they hear about this, they're not going to be happy. So we just got to make sure they don't watch YouTube or anything, or they aren't listening to podcasts. And we should be fine. I'll distract the gods. I'll keep them busy. I'll keep them off the internet, and then you can go post this, and then they'll never know. Okay, that'll be the strategy.
That, Raymond, that sounds like a very fair deal. And with that said, though, I will let you get on with your evening now. Or on with your day, sorry. It's daytime for you.
It is, yeah. Oh my goodness. That's right. So, you know, sometimes in my own brain, I think I'm in America because so many people that I see on, like, YouTube is very American. So sometimes I forget. It's like, oh yeah, I am in this time zone. So I will get going then. But thanks so much. Like, it was such a pleasure to be on and just talk about the things I love, about games, about media, about stuff that everyone loves. Like, it was really fun.
You know, again, I'm very happy to hear that. And Raymond, thank you again for making time to have this conversation with me. And thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Ronald Jankies for the use of music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Raymond and the podcast. And while you're doing that, share, like, and follow whatever else you think makes the algorithm work. Thanks, until next time.